Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
And on The Stack, we review a bunch of comics that came out this week, but no Punisher comics because Pete isn't here.
Exactly. This is a Pete-less sandwich. So you're just going to have
a Pete-less pita?
A Pete-less pita is what
Pete-less
it is.
Pita. There
it's like tofu. It's like an impossible burger of a podcast.
Yeah. Instead of gyro meat, it's hero meat, which is my meatless substitute for gyro meat.
Well, nice. Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about.
like a gyro, like the spitting thing. Gyro, some people call it.
Yes, no, I know what you mean. Are you talking about having a gyro hero?
I'm just saying, like, if you're going to have a meatless substitute for a gyro, maybe you call it hero.
I see, because it's like saving the day.
Yes, I just wanted to get that out of the way at the top of our comic book review podcast.
You launching your meatless gyro, your Greek meatless company.
Yes, if you want to check it out. You got to go to the website. I don't want to give it to you because we're trying to give a real underground feel.
No, that's smart. Like all great businesses start by not telling people about them.
It's true. That's how Subway sandwiches started.
Right? It was literally underground.
It's true. Yeah. Well, I'm glad we got that out of the way. Let's jump into the last issue of Curse Words. Curse Words number 25. This is by Charles Soule and Ryan Brown, all wrapping up in this issue as Wizard goes toe-to-toe with Syzygy for the fate of the entire world. What did you think about this wrap-up?
I mean, I feel like this book has just constantly given you exactly what it promised. It was like, we are going to take this concept of a wizard who comes to Earth. He's a bad guy. He's a bad dude. He's an asshole, and he's going to be that way. He started to become good. We realized he had some stakes in his life. He had a family he was trying to take care of. And he gets to sort of end his story in a fun, big, exciting way.
Yeah, I agree. That was exactly what I was thinking in terms of it staying true to itself. Yeah. Where, fair warning, there's a Ground Zero 9/11 joke in the middle of this book. Which I was like, yo, okay, what are you doing?
I mean, it was just like a reference. I don't know. I wouldn't call that like. It wasn't like, ba-dum boom, 9/11.
Yeah, no, but it had the rhythm of a joke, the way that they played it out. Like, they weren't making fun of 9/11 or anything, but it's definitely, it's pushing the envelope even in the last issue is what I mean by that.
Yeah.
Which is consistent with everything. It isn't like Wizard became a good person at the end. He just became a slightly better person. And it's still gross and over the top and big. And it's a fun place they end it with. I don't think they're going to go in this direction, but with the possibility of more if they ever wanted to revisit it, which I thought was nice.
Yeah, I agree. Like, it's in such an interesting world, and to really, not spoiling anything, saying that to really open it up in the way it does at the end, I thought was a fun way to go out.
Yeah, it's good. And now that it's all over, if you never checked it out, it should be coming out of trade pretty soon, so you can definitely check it out that way. Let's move on to a Marvel comic book, X-Force number 2.
Yeah.
This ended up on a huge cliffhanger last issue, where the X-Men are on the island nation of Krakoa, a bunch of Reavers descended there, and assassinated Professor Xavier. Now, the X-Men, or I guess all the mutants, have resurrection technology, so we know it wasn't totally permanent, but they were actually leaving it a little more permanent than I suspected from the end there.
They're a little stressed about the resurrection process.
They're like, come on, hurry up a little bit.
Like, it's not like, you know, when Jesus came back, it probably didn't come off flawlessly, you know? There was like a 3-day waiting period.
Yeah, they're like, come on, roll back the rock, come
like,
on.
Ooh, hurry up, they really want us to roll back this rock.
Yeah, the mutants, that was a good, was that Seinfeld?
That was one of the...
Roll back the rock.
Come on. You know one of the apostles was like the fun one.
Right. That's not fun, though. That's kind of like when my kids, when we order at a diner and the person goes back to deliver the order and they're like, where's the food? I'm like, it was just fucking put in, you pieces of shit.
Oh, my God.
Come on!
This feels real. Your Seinfeld is angry and swears at his kids.
It's shrinkage, you bitches.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Edgy.
Yeah. You know, just like sort of plussing it up a little bit.
Sort of a modern Seinfeld. Mm-hmm, oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. It's Steinfeld, and it stars Haley Steinfeld.
Great.
Yes.
That was smart stuff.
X-Force, though, what did you think about the second issue, Justin?
Now, X-Force has the sort of pedigree of like, hey, it's your favorite X-Men, but with pouches, guns, only knives, like sort of like gimmicky in your face. And this, I would have assumed was going to carry on that trend, but it doesn't, I feel like. I mean, it is definitely, the choices of the mutants are sort of the like more irreverent, badass mutants, like Wolverine.
Well, it's also pretty gross in the right way. Like, it definitely pushes the evolutes that way, where they take the Reavers, they open them up, they're dissecting the Reavers and detecting things like they have wires inside of their ears.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is like this, rather than having the Edge be like, you won't believe how edgy these mutants are, the Edge is much more in like the detail and sort of the interesting ideas that are within. Like, these Reavers aren't like decked out with cyborgs with a bunch of robot parts. They're like humans who've been surgically built into like bone cyborgs or something.
Yeah.
Like I think that's so interesting. The character's really fun. I love how Wolverine is called, I can see inside your skull, and it's like a spent ashtray in a Depression era hobo bar.
Yeah,
which my grandparents ran a hobo bar, and they didn't make any money.
They didn't have any skull ashtrays in there.
No, it's when you're getting paid in beans, you gotta eat beans. That's what they always used to say.
I think this is very good. I have been enjoying most of the mutant line, and it's extreme in a different way, I think, is what I'd say about it. The place where it ends at the end of the issue is pretty fucked up in terms of what happens to a popular character. But I'm curious. This is definitely taking the idea that, oh, these mutants are safe because they can be resurrected at any point, and pushing it to the extreme to see how possible that is.
Yeah, and something that seems so simple in sort of the House of X, Powers of 10 stuff, was like, yeah, we're just going to come back from the dead. And they're like, hey, Professor X was killed, and we hadn't actually figured out how this works. So it's like when you spill coffee on your laptop, and you're like, I know. I can get this data out, but what do I do now? And I'm stressed. I'm very stressed.
Yeah, that is stressful, and that happened to me once.
Exactly. I spilled coffee on your laptop.
Yes. Thank you for that, by the way. It taught me some important lessons about resurrecting my dad.
And whoa, that was an odd side effect.
Yeah.
You don't need all that computer stuff, Alex. You're a good person without technology.
Thanks, man. Speaking of which, continuing with our audio podcast that we're recording on a Zoom H6.
Turn it off. We can just be ourselves.
Podcast to people's brains, man.
Let's just talk.
Okay, that sounds good.
Turn off the mics.
I don't know how to do that. Let's move on to DC Comics Black Label, The Last God, number 2. This is by Philip Kennedy Johnson, who we had on our live show very recently, so go back and listen to that podcast because that was a lot of fun. This is continuing his fantasy epic. There are a bunch of creatures, well, okay, two timelines. 30 years ago, a bunch of heroes defeated this evil god called, was it the Void God?
Yeah.
Yeah. God of the Void, or at least that's what they said.
The Last God.
The Last God. And 30 years later, it turns out they weren't quite truthful
something
about that.
Something was a little fishy.
And some insane sort of undead monsters started infecting people. We flash between the two timelines back and forth in this issue. I loved it. And one of the things loved it beyond the designs, which is something that we talked about before, is there's this neat visual trick they do for the different timelines where they delineate them with icons. And I thought that was just a smart, simple way of telling you where we are.
It's great. I think that's a great example of the attention to detail in this book is so, he talked about it on the show. He has been thinking about this for so long. The back matter, there he includes a song. He includes a couple text stories, and it's just great. It's so well thought out. It's so nice to jump into a warm 1980s waterbed.
It is. The action is extreme. It's over the top. The character designs are absolutely insane, but the characters are also fascinating as well, where I feel like with a story like this, the guy in the main timeline, the quote-unquote present timeline, who is our new hero that we're following, those often end up being a cipher, but the way that he's designed and the way that he acts is so much more interesting than your typical, I'm a hero who fought in the gladiatorial pits, and now I'm in the middle of something bigger.
Because I think you're right, and I love that because no one likes a cipher.
All right, I see what you're going for.
What are you talking about?
I set myself
lowercase C.
Okay.
You need to learn to read my language.
You know what? Let's just turn off this podcast and see what happens.
Now who's being salty?
Great book. Definitely.
Did you ever have a waterbed?
No, I didn't.
Did you ever lay in one?
Sure. Very weird.
I'm trying to remember. Were they warm?
I don't think so. I hope not.
So you would just get
it. Were they full of piss?
Yeah, you can always. You could.
Yeah, you can do anything in a waterbed.
It's like being at sea. There are no rules. You can get married on a waterbed.
Yeah.
It's officially international
water.
Yeah, well, it's not where you get the water. As long as you fill your water out of the international waters, you can do whatever you want.
International waterbed.
Yeah. I smell a second business.
I don't know if I have the time. Next one to talk about from Marvel Comics, Venom. Number 20, this is a postscript to the whole Absolute Carnage storyline.
But still a lot going on for a postscript.
Tons going on, including evil Reed Richards finally takes off his little hat.
Yeah.
And you get to see what his head looks like.
And he needs to shave the front fronds of his hair.
This is what I'm saying as well. So this is the maker, the evil Reed Richards from the Ultimate Universe. Let's spoil some stuff here. I think we can get into it just with a little warning.
Come on. It's Thanksgiving almost. Let's spoil some
stuff. Here's a little extra stuffing and helping for you.
Yeah. I'll spoil some stuff. If you don't brine your turkey for more than 24 hours, you're wasting your time. Someone told me that today, and I was like, I'm still going to do it for only 12, probably. Because how do you get your shit together around the holidays?
Right. You can't do that. You can't do that for 24 hours. That's too much time.
It's got the time.
Come on.
All that salt water.
And that's our review of Venom number 20. Eddie Brock, for most of the issue, is bonding with his son, who has just found out that he's a son. He also has another secret, which is that seemingly he can destroy symbiotes.
The son, yes.
Now, this is what the maker, the evil Reed Richards, is exploring. He's talking to somebody, this organization, that we don't get to see what it is until the end, but explaining to them yet another Donny Cates retcon, completely changing Marvel history, where he outlines that all of these symbiotes have shown up at important dark points in Marvel history.
Ahead of large events. Almost like how The Watcher shows up. You're like, whoa, something fucked up is about to happen.
Yeah.
And what Donnie does in this book is he's saying, actually, a symbiote will give birth in the same way right before a major intergalactic, multidimensional event.
Right. So presumably the thing that's coming, we think what's implied by the maker and implied by this book, is the coming of Null, the god of the symbiotes, is coming to Earth. I would argue it's the other thing that's revealed at the end of the book, which is, here's the big spoiler, the maker is talking to the Council of Reeds, who we haven't seen in a really long time, and they give him permission to bring back the Ultimate Universe.
Yeah.
Which is...
That seems crazy. It's funny you call this like a little epilogue. These are huge ideas with major ramifications of the Marvel Universe and incorporating stuff that has like no business being in a Venom comic.
Yeah.
Like the Council of Reeds, what?
Right.
But I think it's great. I love this sort of casual just drop into deep Marvel continuity because I do think if the maker, Ultimate Reed, is going to just have his own symbiote and be like this smart Venom, like that's awesome.
That is awesome. I think it also points to what Donnie was talking about when he was on our live show, which you could also listen to that podcast. Lots of
Get
plugs
loose.
This episode.
Judah Friedlander was on that.
Yeah, it was a good show.
Great
I had
show.
A good time.
Me too.
He's building this Uber story through all of his books. They're all connected, including Thor that's coming up, Guardians of the Galaxy, Thanos, Venom, all of it is one big story, and I think that's what we're getting here. I think the thing that I took away is, you think the big universe-changing event is Null coming. That's not the big thing.
No.
I think this evil Reed, the maker, is going to totally fuck up the Marvel Universe in a very big way.
Yeah, he seems like a bad dude, but again, he should just shave the front of his head
and just
commit
there.
To the lump top.
Yeah, you got a lumpy top, go for the lumpy top, it's fine.
Exactly, don't try to hide it with a couple
Got brains, know how to use them.
He oddly has a comb under
right
here.
Huh. Interesting. Next one to talk about, another DC comic, Shazam number 8. This is continuing Geoff Johns' book. Now, Scott Collins is doing the full art on this issue, at least. He was sharing art duties with Dale Eaglesham in the last issue.
Yes.
And big change to the Shazam mythology in this issue, as Billy Batson continues to try to connect with his father, who has shown up for the first time in years. All of the different members of the Shazam Captain Marvel family are split between these different magical lands, and ultimately we're coalescing and bringing things together. I really like this issue a lot. I thought there was a lot of great mythology that they're laying out here. They're starting to throw everything into it, and it's fun.
It feels like Fables. You remember Fables?
Yes.
But I think Dale Eaglesham on art before definitely set that tone, I feel like, and it's continuing on going forward. And I like that as well. It feels like a big event, but it's just focused in this one title, and it's fun.
Yeah.
There's a lot of story here. Geoff Johns is sort of doing what he did to the Green Lantern, to Flash. He's setting up some very clear, clean lines and sort of story points to hit going forward. There are these seven worlds. They're going to be seven Shazams are going to sit on the thrones, one in each world. We don't know who the seventh is. Black Adam shows up and he's like a bad guy, but not as bad as the other bad guys. He's like a medium bad guy who may become a good guy.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that's kind of his thing always.
Yeah.
But yeah, they have the Monster Society of Evil potentially is going to come back thanks to Mr. Mind and Savannah. You have the Seven Sins show up. It's all building to this crescendo with a big fun thing that happens towards the end that I won't spoil. But this is great. This is really good. Yes. I'm excited to see where this goes next. And I doubt they will, just because Geoff Johns is so busy. But I hope they keep this going long term.
Yeah, and I hope I finally can shout Shazam and get the powers.
Did it happen?
I just said it. I think you have to shout it. Oh. And you have to mean it.
Shazam!
That's good.
Mm. New Mutants number 2 from Marvel Comics. This is continuing the other book that Jonathan Hickman is writing along with X-Men. This issue in particular felt like, and I think we talked about this with the first issue, but it felt like such a Shaggy hangout book to me, and I love it.
Yeah. It feels like he's just kicking around having some fun.
Yeah.
He's just...
Which is okay. X-Men is these insane, huge ideas.
Yep.
Even like the second issue of the new X-Men comic was Cyclops and his two kids that now he's referring to as kids trying to fight through two islands
trying
that are
trying to break
mating.
Up some island fucking.
Yeah.
Either chaperone a little land-on-land action.
Yeah. So all of that is going on here. Meanwhile,
international waters.
Right. The New Mutants are in space. They're trying to track down Sam Guthrie. They got arrested. Sam kind of not exactly breaks them out. They hang out for a little bit, and then they go on a new adventure, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Love it. I think it's great.
It feels like the classic New Mutants book in that they would just go on like weird adventures into sort of outside the X-Men universe. They were like kids who were play around in the kids' universe. It felt like sort of Legionnaires-esque into the DC universe. And so this definitely feels like it's following in that line. But again, like getting into sort of the weirder characters, the weirder parts of the characters, like Roberto Da Costa, sort of a dick.
And he's great. Hickman writes a great Sunspot.
Yeah.
And he narrates most of the issue, which is a lot of fun. There's also a character in here that showed up, I want to say it was Rob Williams' run on Rocket Raccoon, who is, he's the amphibian lawyer whose name is Murd Blurdock,
yeah.
And he is a blind amphibian intergalactic lawyer and the best lawyer in the universe. And there's this, if you can track down the issue of Rocket Raccoon where he defends him in space, because the entire thing is just like, his name is Murd Blurdock, and they're like, yeah, but you're actually the superhero known as Blur Devil or whatever. And he's like, no, absolutely not. And there's just, they riff off of that the entire time, are very merciless about Daredevil through this character. And it's absolutely ridiculous. So I love that he's bringing in stuff like that.
And he's a bad lawyer.
He's a terrible lawyer.
He needs his own Nagi Flurson.
He does have a Nagi Flurson or whatever it is in the Rocket Raccoon book.
Yeah.
And then Elektra shows up in the back of the courtroom and is like, hey, gonna fight ninjas, come help. And he's like, I have to go.
That's so fun.
It's a fun little bit. I have a question for you.
Oh, good.
I've been wanting to ask you this for a while. I forgot to ask it with the first issue, and I feel like you'd be the person to know. Chamber.
Yes.
Right? So as far as I remember, Chamber's deal was he had Cyclops' powers, butt under control and accidentally blasted off his chin when he first got his powers, right?
No. No psychic. He has a psionic force that because he didn't identify his powers at the right time, because he was growing up in a house that like was anti-mutant, it exploded and took out from his nose down to his chest.
Okay, yeah. But whatever it was an accident, right?
Yeah, it was because his powers are manifesting and he couldn't control them. So he was more of a metaphor.
So why, when they can bring anybody back in their ideal body, does Chamber still have no chin?
Well, I think there have been some issues of like Generation X where Chamber does have his full face.
Okay.
But I also think, I mean, I don't know. That's potentially just a weird thing they haven't figured out yet. But also it may be that he feels comfortable this way and that's the way he wants to be.
Yeah.
He's British, so he loves a nice scarf.
Mm-hmm.
And that just covers up the psionic hole in his face.
Maybe he's like, don't want to shave. And then he just blasts off the bottom of his face. Like, all the time.
Don't want to shave. Keep my face blown.
All right. Thanks for answering that question.
Hey, anytime.
Let's move on to an indie comic book. This is from an old comedy friend of ours back in the day named Rob Casey. It's a book called Cyborg USA, number one. You can check out the book right now on Indiegogo, I believe. I think they're crowdfunding for a second issue, though I'm not 100% sure. And the idea of this book is there's a gymnastics team, ends up in a train crash, gets blasted.
They're good at gymnastics, but they also stop a terrorist attack.
Yes.
So they're heroes.
And then they get blasted to pieces and become the team Cyborg USA, end up fighting some evil menaces. What'd you think about the book, Justin?
You know what this reminded me of? It are a lot like, you ever watch Bionic 6 when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah.
It was a cartoon in the like late 80s, early 90s. I think I watched reruns on like USA or something weird like that, I want to guess. But it was a family who went through a similar thing. They were in an accident of some sort, and all of their body parts were replaced with cyborg things. And I was like very pleasantly reminded of that. And it seems like this has, because they're all adults, there's maybe a nefarious government thing happening here.
Yeah, there's also, it's going for comedy stuff throughout.
Yeah.
So it felt like that maybe meets Team America World Police a little bit, where it's irreverent, there's some gross stuff, there's some sex jokes, etc. But I thought it was fun. I was also pleasantly surprised.
I'm very curious what the villain, the Red Skirts,
yes,
why they took on the skirt as a unifying...
I don't know, maybe they thought it rhymed with red shirt.
Yeah, I guess that's true, and I guess that maybe that is just a fun joke.
The most evil thing that a person could do is rhyme.
Yeah, we all know that.
All the time.
Oof, you're dead.
Last one to talk about. This is from DC Comics Hill House line. Basket Full of Heads, number two. This is from Joe Hill, who is the head of the line. The head of the line. You get what I did there. Now, the first issue of the book is set on this island. We don't really get to see the basket full of heads, but we do get to meet a couple of characters, including a upright young police officer who seems to be interning or just working for the police over the summer. He has a girlfriend.
Practice cop.
Very much in love with this girl. They're hanging around with the chief of police and his wife, and there's a big storm hitting. At the same time storm hits, a bunch of convicts escape, and that's where we pick up this issue. I thought this was great.
It's so good. This is so... It feels like a 70s sort of horror thriller movie. And it's so well-paced. It's so well-drawn. You feel like you're just there with them. And the stuff that happens is... I won't spoil it. Is so good. And the action sequences are so well-played.
Two things that I loved about this issue in particular, again, without delving too far into spoilers, is the sense of time. Like, literally, they're following a clock at certain points.
Yeah.
And it's mostly silent. It's just the art that you're looking at. But you get to see the sense of tension as it continues, as it paces out through the scene, which I thought was great. The other thing that I thought was great is we completely flip perspectives this issue. You spend most of the first issue... very similar to like an Alien movie or something else where it's, you're focusing on this heroic male character. Of course he's going to be the main character of the book. But nope, not at all. It's actually the female character who is left alone in this issue and has to fight her way out. Again, really well crafted, really fun, good horror, funny too and dark. We're only beginning with the concept of the book by the end, but I'm very excited to see where it goes.
And I'm very curious to see if this is a supernatural tale or a psychological tale.
Oh,
if you get my meaning.
I do.
Without spoiling it, but still talking about it.
Right. A basket full of heads is kind of a shirt as well. Like a shirt can hold, be a basket.
Yeah.
It's holding your head up.
Oh, yeah. I know what you mean. I think, did you eat a bunch of turkey and are feeling tired?
Yeah, but I brined it for, how long are you supposed to do? A full week?
45 minutes.
Full week outside?
Just 45 minutes is all
just
you need.
Just leave it outside for a week?
Yeah, that's what you want to do.
Yeah, when and the raccoons start picking at it, you know it's ready.
Toss it in the freezer and then throw it in the deep fryer.
Yeah, done. Into it.
This is one of my favorite books that has come out lately.
Oh, wow.
Really liking it.
All right, definitely pick that up. If you would like to support our show, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. at the People's Improv Theater Loft in New York. Come on by. We'll chat with you about comics. Justin, what do you want to plug?
You can friend us on Facebook and also follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live.
Check us out at comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and more. You can subscribe and comment on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Spotify, or the app of your choice. And we'll see you at the comic book shop.
Now to slide into this ice cold waterbed.